Joe, we ready? All right, good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 16th, and ask if everybody would please join the board in honoring America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, good morning and welcome. First item on our agenda is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on any item on today's agenda. If there's anybody wishing to do so, please come up to the microphone. And seeing nobody moving immediately, we'll move on to consideration of minutes from July 9th.
Move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Next item on our agenda is consideration of personnel actions. We have all actions listed.
Move personnel action as submitted.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consideration of claims. Our first claims of the period of the entirely in the new year.
Under a million.
Not quite a million, so uh-huh. I'll move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims passed. Consent agenda. Please pull item number 7, which was an item put on by Story County Conservation involving an amendment to their agreement with Shive Hattery. It has become moot, so we're pulling it. Other than that, all items listed.
Okay.
I'll move approval.
As amended?
As amended.
Amended.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes with the noted change. Public hearing items, discussion and consideration of a proposal for hosted voice, VoIP. How about that? How about if I go with VoIP telephone system? Barbara Steinbeck. Hi, Barb.
Good morning. This is Mark Volkmer. He's the representative from Lida.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for being here today.
Shelley asked us to do this all over again, so good morning. I'd like to introduce Mark Volkmer from Light Edge. They're located in Altoona and Des Moines and several other locations. I'll let him tell us a little bit about his company. And the reason he's here is because in response to the RFP that was submitted in June for the new voice phone system, they were the winning bid out of the three we actually received. So I'll let Mark tell you a little bit about his company.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. Light Edge Solutions is an IT solutions provider located in Des Moines, Iowa. We have a data center in Altoona, Kansas City, Minneapolis, Quad Cities, Omaha, and the company is owned by an individual by the name of Phil Anschutz, who is involved in entertainment today. He's worth about $10 billion. He owns the Staples Center, the LA Kings hockey team, the O2 Center in London, multiple other entities, privately held company. And our core competency is doing hosted solutions, telephony, Microsoft applications, and we own a very large network throughout the Midwest to transport our services. So we have provided a proposal for Story County to provide hosted PBX solution for the county, and we're fortunate enough to win the bid.
I wanted to talk a little bit about how the decision was made. There were five areas that I felt that Light Edge excelled in, and of course, number one, near and dear to our heart, the cost was a lot. It was more within the range that we expected. They came in well below the other two. Also, this will be a cloud solution per se, because it will be hosted off-site, but I like that LightEdge is essentially a private cloud rather than mixing us in with everyone else. I like the vendor itself. I've had experience with them in the past, and they've proved to be very capable and understanding of situations, quick to react if there is something that we need assistance with. I also like the features of the product. I submitted a 27-page RFP asking, you know, can you do this, can you do that, and their answers were the most favorable of the other two. Also, I like that the support that they offer is in-house, and it's not third-party, which the other vendors offered third-party support. When I have a problem, I want to call the person I bought the product from, and that's where LightEdge went out. Any questions?
What is it going to do for me in the grand scheme of things? How is my life going to be made better?
Well, what do you have a problem with the current phone system? What are some of the issues that bother you?
Bother me?
That you think could be improved on?
Well, probably the most notable one is when they come and call in directly to the 7300 number. We're not really sure where the actual
caller ID
originated from.
Yes.
The ID, it could be a lot of times Jan or Darla will then say, well, you know, maybe this came from a different department or something of this nature. So the ID certainly would be a tremendous improvement for us. But from a personal standpoint, I don't get that many calls. I usually direct most of the calls to either Rick or Paul. And that works out pretty good from that standpoint, you know, because they like to talk a lot more than me. So.
Clearly.
What I like about this solution is it gives us a lot of visibility into our calls, not only the incoming caller ID, but also it has a menu system. When you come back for lunch, how do you know if you've missed any calls? You don't. What we can do is when we dial into the menu system, you can see the missed calls. If they don't leave a message, you don't know currently if they called or not. You can see the calls that you placed. How many times have you, a couple days later, thought, oh, gosh, I want to call so-and-so back, and I don't know what his number is? You can see the calls that you placed, and those can be limited by number of calls or date or however you want to do it. It's very flexible. You can see the calls that you received. You can see almost any call that ever went into your phone. So that's what I like is the visibility and the flexibility there. Another feature a lot of people have been asking about is voicemail. They like to see, well, they like to keep voicemail forever, which there is a limit on our current phone system. What this system will do is it will place a copy of your voice message as a WAV file, MP3 probably, in your mailbox. And you can save it as an attachment, save it out. It won't really add to the size of your mailbox significantly just because the voice files are very small. So that's another good feature that I think will be well received. We'll also receive paging capabilities. You know, in an event of emergency, how do we contact each other? We don't. And so this will help with that, evacuating the building easily or, you know, anything else that we want to pass along. And this could be, what we can do with that is we can have paging for all buildings involved or just certain areas. That's something that we can, you know, scale up or down however we want.
Or for public knowledge and so forth, will our outlying departments have the same access, such as conservation, for example? They have a different call-in number.
Yes, that was part of the points I was going to talk about, that this is all-encompassing. So anyone who has a data connection will also be on our phone system. I even had poor Mark quote out animal control with their three phones. That may or may not be something that we would add, but it's certainly a possibility if we want to. And part of the beauty of this is we can help DHS out with their problem with their phone system. They're no longer running under maintenance. So we can pull them in. They can be separate but equal. They can split things out however they need to do to satisfy the state requirements, but we can also keep them under our umbrella as well.
You talked a little bit earlier about some concerns about the ability to port our phone numbers. And that's you're not concerned about that, or we'll be able to, all of our phone numbers will be able to be ported. We won't have to worry about our...
Yes. Mark, can you talk a little bit about that?
With the solution that we've proposed, especially here in Nevada, there were some issues, but what we've done is designed a solution to not have for you to change your numbers. So we have the ability to make it look like the numbers have been ported, so you won't see any issues in regard to the porting of the numbers based on the way that we've designed the solution.
What kind of time frame are we looking at?
I would say you're looking at probably 60 to 90 days. The thing that takes the longest in these types of implementations is actually getting the access procured to each location. So that's usually 60, 90 days out.
Yep. But as far as we're concerned, it will be a seamless transition. One day we'll be using the old phones, same number, and the next day we'll be using the new phones.
We'll have to have some training. This will be a learning curve for a lot of people. And we'll have new desk sets that we'll own. However, we'll lease everything else from LightEdge. There will be a learning curve. There are people who have never known another phone system. There are other people who have known others and can't wait to get back to this. So, but as far as what is the transition, our phones will not, business will still be able to operate correctly.
Right. I think the biggest thing will be, you don't know what this thing's going to bring to you as far as added benefits. I mean, one of the things that potentially could be of benefit is this system will have the ability to find you and follow you. So if you choose to, you say, hey, you know, I'm going to be out on the golf course today or whatever it is. I'm going to be away from my office. I want my phone to ring to my cell phone directly, bypassing. I mean, you can always be contacted via your number. You also will have the ability to basically emulate your desk phone from your cell phone. So if you need to make a call through work via your cell phone, those people won't see your cell phone number show up on their display. It will be your work number. So I think the transition will be a lot of just learning, hey, can I do this? Oh, wow, that's great. Here's some more things I can do that I couldn't do in the past. But it should be fairly seamless. I mean, this is a solution that we implement very frequently. This is one of our main product lines. So we've been doing it for a long time. So we shouldn't have any problems.
Okay. And where do we stand on the agreement itself between us and LightEdge?
Mark brought the agreement, and Jessica has already looked at it, and the CEO has already signed it. So it's ready for Story County signature. One thing I wanted to add, too, I see as a future benefit to this system is perhaps the implementation of the video conferencing capabilities. Not every desk set is capable of that. You have to purchase a specific one, but... You know, we have offices all over. Sometimes it's more convenient to have a video conference than an actual face-to-face, although there is value in that. Potential interviewees for job openings, I see some benefit there. And there may even be some long-distance savings. There is a rollover feature that the system looks for the lowest rate and hooks onto that. So.
Every location that's connected via this system will be a whatever four-digit dial if you're doing that today. So if you're calling back and forth between here and Ames, that's not a toll call anymore. That's just an on-net call that you don't get billed for.
Now, question on the video conferencing. If we have the equipment here, but if we want to communicate with someone in another county, for example, do they have to have a certain equipment in order to be able to receive that?
They do.
Okay, and the reason I raise that question, I'm thinking of it more or less in mental health regionalization as we move forward with to reduce the amount of travel time. If we would ever set up a conference call type situation and use the video conferencing feature, could people be able to access us at the site if we were the host of that particular deal via their computer, for example? Or by logging in to a certain call-in. That, to me, would be sort of like the go-to-meeting concept. I don't know if this is the exact similar to that, or would they have to have something out else in their particular location to be able to see us, you know, maybe like yourself or like your iPad, you've got the Skype or FaceTime and stuff like that, you know.
That's one of the beauties of our company. We have the ability to solve those types of problems, whatever endpoint you potentially are looking at. I think as far as Barb's concerned, the video conferencing on the phones is really more geared towards if you wanted to call each other within the confines of the system and do video calls, that would be acceptable. Now, we do a lot of solutions with other companies in the mental health, the telehealth type of solutions, which does not really rely upon the telephony that we're talking about today. Does that answer your question?
Yes, okay. Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay. In that case, I will open the public hearing on consideration of the proposal with LightEdge and ask if there's anyone who would like to address it. Seeing no one moving, I will close the public hearing and turn to the board for your pleasure.
I would move approval of the proposal for the entering into the LightEdge agreement as proposed.
Second. Motion and a second. Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. So Barb, I can sign that whenever you guys would like. Next item on the agenda and under additional items is discussion and consideration of revised Story County travel policy. Auditor Lucy Martin. Hi, Lucy.
Morning. The travel policy is something that Alyssa Wignall, Human Resources Director, and I looked at. It had been drafted, I believe, about 10 years ago. It was just time to look at it to see where it was. In our revisions, which you have before you, the main changes were we took out, some technology things that had not been included for things like Wi-Fi, stuff like that people might need to use during travel for county business. Updated the per diem references. We use the federal government's per diems by location, geographical location. The main change, and we didn't take anything out, the main change was that we did clear up just some vague language, was to add a portion about benefits that you accrue while traveling for the county, that those accrue to the county and not to the individual. This is just the draft. I would expect this might generate a lot of comments. I would hope that it does for those people that do travel on county business. I appreciate that input. Alyssa's on vacation this week, which is why she's not presenting with me. But I'm glad she's taking vacation because she's a hard worker. But that's the main. It's just we had added that, and where we got that language was we didn't draft that ourselves. Is we reviewed a lot of different policies that people have, local governments, and I believe the language comes pretty much stolen directly from the state of Iowa's travel policy. So,
okay. So just so I'm clear, and I understand it would mean more than this, but it would mean basically that I travel somewhere, county is either paying for it or reimbursing it. Those frequent flyer miles that might go into my account now would not go to me. They would go to the county.
Well, I think when we the two of us had a lot of discussions going back and forth, and we put in because this was needed in the travel policy, but I think there's going to be we could have done a lot more changes. We decided to bring it to the board instead and have input because every section we looked at sort of generated more questions. I think if it's purchased with the county credit card, then that would accrue to the county. We reimburse for a lot of travel expenses, and I don't know that if there's any way to police that. It's a question that we need to that's going to be part of the 7-day review, or if you want to make it longer than 7 days.
My concern with that is the amount of record keeping that would have to be entailed by someone. Because you have to arrive at a certain number of miles traveled or other benefits before you really get the discount rates for the frequent flyer for other ticket. And so who's going to be responsible basically for having to report and update all of that information. I mean, you wouldn't know offhand unless they're going to contact Story County that, say, I would be eligible for an upgrade or, I'm going to say, an
right.
extra ticket.
Well, the policy doesn't address now, you know, the difference between using the county card versus a reimbursable, like you pay for yourself and then the county reimburses you for the eligible expenses. Alyssa and I ended up having a long discussion about the credit card policy, which is part of the travel policy. So that's the thing. It started pulling on a thread. You tend to unravel things. So I think this leads to a larger discussion that.
Well, and I took this, Lucy, kind of as that first step when
right.
we had both Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank come over the last few weeks, and I think we as a board asked if you and Renee Tweet and Alyssa
right.
would mind getting together, and so I took this kind of as
busy
this
people
is how we,
having a meeting as since yeah we've
absolutely.
Been unable to schedule that.
But I took this as kind of the first step. Well, we started looking at that, and we realized we better get this cleaned up first before we go on and have
yeah.
the next discussion.
So that's why it's you know, it's out there for review. I would hope that, you know, we have people that do travel for the county give the board comments, and we can discuss those further.
Yeah, and I'll just give my concern right now. I want this. I don't like putting a policy in place that we can't enforce and can't police.
Right.
And the line that gets me is any benefits received from a county paid directly or via reimbursement
mm-hmm.
travel cost
right.
shall accrue to the county, not the individual. And I think we just established in this discussion, I don't know how we get there.
Right. And we came to the same conclusion. We looked at a lot of different policies, and we sort of brought this forward as a draft for discussion so we can find out what actually works for Story County.
Yep.
Okay. The one question, if I, Mr. Chair, that I want to just go back to is we have the 50-mile radius for overnight accommodations and things of this nature. And in the past, there was always a statement or an understanding that there had to be prior approval if we were to exceed that by either the department head, if it was one of staff or the Board of Supervisors. Say, for example, if Darren or Deb was going to be on a committee or a commission and they were having
I think we have that that waiver in there that if you were part of the planning process, then the 50 miles is not
okay,
is waived.
But you just say if you're part of the process, you don't have to submit.
So you still have to do a travel authorization. I think it's what constitutes overnight travel.
Okay.
You know, if I'm just going to Ames for a conference, I don't get to stay in
the
hotel.
No, I get, but I'm thinking in terms of
nice.
In the past, it appeared like if Darren Moon, for example, was on the planning committee and he was staying in Des Moines, well, that's only 32 miles.
Right.
And we generally had a way to acknowledge that he was going to be able to be compensated for the overnight. And so is that going to be still a part of the travel?
Yeah, that didn't change.
Okay, good.
And I think that's always been also the discretion of office holders and to make that call as well.
Okay, good. So, good. Okay, great. That was the only question that I had. Again, I do think it's important. Like you say, it's been 10 years, but from time to time, we always need to take a look at it and see if there needs to be some changes. So I appreciate Alyssa and you bringing.
Right. And Alyssa worked with the auditor's office because my predecessor, Mary Mosman, had drafted this originally. We didn't really have an HR department at the time. And the travel authorizations also get turned into our office as well. So and the credit card bills. So we have, you know, we see a lot of the end result of travel. Let's put that.
And we have no meeting on the 23rd, so this, if approved by the board, would not be a 7-day review. It would be a 14-day review.
Which is good because Alyssa's out this week and she'll have time to, we'll have time to meet about those comments that come in. So.
Good. Okay.
Thoughts?
Well, I think it's, you know, it was a good idea to look at it and make the changes and the updates. I haven't had much of an opportunity to look at it yet, and I think the furthest I've been on county business was Mason City, so, and I made that trip and back in one day, so I'm good. But
well, it certainly affects me quite a bit more than you guys.
You're a traveling
because,
man.
Because you know, I'm heading to Fort Worth this Friday for several days, and but generally speaking, the thing that I appreciate the most is, again, the checks and balances with your office in our office. There have been numerous times where even whether I hadn't even turned the travel authorization in, and I would be notified, where's the travel authorization, because you guys want to make sure that that's on file, and very much appreciated. And then sometimes when the credit card comes back in, and whether or not we have receipts and all the receipts and so forth. So I think the checks and balances that your office provides for us is very much appreciated. And, you know, to my knowledge, I don't think we've ever had anybody that's lodge any concern or questions over,
you
know,
we have all the paperwork if that happens.
So I do appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So I would propose that we approve on the 14-day review, and then this will come back to us at a later time if there are any other changes that need to take place.
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. I would expect that we will have some comments coming back. I think Lucy and Alyssa did a nice job putting together a draft here, and we're going to see what the concerns are over this two-week period. Any other comments? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes up for 14-day review. Lucy, thank you.
I'm going to stay up here for Deb's.
All right. Outstanding. Yeah. I don't mind at all. Next item is discussion consideration of changes to case management reimbursement methodology for FY14. Deb Shildroth. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Good morning. How is everyone doing today?
Super.
All right. Well, changes continue in the disability arena. This time, it affects our case management program. So I want to just go through a little bit of history about case management. It's a Medicaid reimbursed service. It's always been a cost settled service, meaning we prepare a cost report for the beginning of the fiscal year. We bill that particular rate throughout the fiscal year, and then in September we do an actual cost report for that prior fiscal year, submit that, and then it's cost settled. So sometimes we had to pay money into Iowa Medicaid. Most of the time we got funding back. But that's how the program has been set up since 1988. Senate File 446, and that's referenced in the letter that you have before you, was passed and signed by the governor this legislative session. And the bill contains cost containment language that requires DHS and Iowa Medicaid to establish parameters around the reimbursement methodology for case management. They're looking at a short-term plan, which would affect the current fiscal year, and then they're going to convene a work group to look at a longer-term plan for future fiscal years. In the first proposal for the short-term plan, Iowa Medicaid wanted case management programs to use their actual fiscal year 12 rate, and then they were going to add 4.7% onto that. And that proposal received a lot of static because programs said, you know, that really isn't looking at cost containment, that's just a rate cap. Mm-hmm. So how is that going to arrive at what you really are charged at arriving at? So IME went back to the the drawing board, and their second and current proposal is to place limits on administrative costs for case management, and that limit is 23% of the direct service costs. And the direct service costs are primarily the case managers and the case management supervisor because they're involved with providing the services. So given this, Iowa Medicaid is requiring case management programs to revise their fiscal year 14 projected cost reports. And we have done that, and that is on the board's agenda for the July 30th meeting. So Carla Webb and Aaron Rewertz and I met with Lisa Markley last week to look at options in managing these changes. The difference that we came up with between expenditures and revenues with case management is $147,610. And that comes at a time that we've moved the case management program out of the Mental Health Disability Fund and into the general fund. As a net zero, because when we met in January for our work session, we didn't know about this change or that they were even talking about this change. So when the program was in the Mental Health and Disability Services Fund, our case management program, there are indirect costs from other offices that factor into our cost report, and those indirects are like IT facilities, the Board of Supervisors, the county audit, those kinds of things. And those are indirect costs are determined through a place called Cost Advisory Services. They do a report for us each year to help us determine what percentage of those indirect costs should be factored into our cost report. And in fiscal year 12, the percentage was 12.27%, so that was about $70,402 that came out of the case management reimbursement into the county's general fund to reimburse those indirects. In fiscal year 13, that jumped up to about 21%, or $112,513. Projected now for fiscal year 14, it's about 35%, or $184,378. And the reason for that jump is the changes in our facilities and changes that were made in data and IT services. So those are the greatest increases are in those indirects. So what I would like to open up for discussion is the consideration, at least for this fiscal year, of the board waiving the requirement of case management to pay back for those indirect costs, especially now since we're in the same fund as those indirect service costs are. So that would be the difference between what we would be paying at $184,000 and then what our gap is, $147,000, is about $36,768. And if that amount is waived, then we won't have to look at reducing positions, which even if we look at reducing positions, that's not going to arrive very easily at that $147,000 because we can't reduce the case manager positions because they're bringing in the revenue.
Right. Well, that's direct anyway, right?
Exactly. Even if Yes. So the more indirect would be my time, Carla's time, the clerical time. Yeah. And that's not all of our time is in this cost report. We have to parcel that out and keep time allocation sheets to support how much time we have towards case management, and it certainly doesn't come to this $147,000.
Let me make sure that I understand exactly what's been happening. Lucy really helped me through this to make sure that I'm getting there. Used to be, as we had case management under mental health, it made a lot of sense as a county to charge them those indirect, the IT kind of things, because it was a way for the county to recoup some of our cost out of mental health that we couldn't otherwise get. Now that we've shifted case management to the general fund, it's really all coming out of the same pot anyway, whether we have it run through you and back or not, it's all general fund dollars. Am I seeing that accurately?
Yeah, and, you know, we budgeted as well as we could given the information we had. Now we have additional information, and once again we're playing sort of catch up with our budget here. So we did pretty well to only be off, I think. I don't know. Yeah, we're trying to iron out all these changes in the program and also comply with the rules. So, but yeah, I think your understanding is on here.
So how project a year from now, January, when we start a new budgeting process with the current, as best you can, with the new current rules that are in place as we look at indirect costs, et cetera, does that change the method by which we try to approach that? Because as I read the document, it is about a 10% differential between what we used to get and what the new requirements as far as the cap is concerned. So maybe you haven't had a time to really think through the entire process, but I do think it's going to cause us to take a look at making some adjustments as we move forward to be able to stay within that range. Am I wrong in that regard?
No, you're correct. I'm going to bump this up now to a regional level. In our eight-county region, six of the eight counties have county-operated case management programs. And as of July 1st, all of those programs are in those individual county general funds. The two counties that do not have county-operated case management contract with the Department of Human Services for their case management. And DHS is affected. Their case management program is affected by these very same rules. As a region, and as you can imagine, since this has come out, this issue has floated to the top of our plate in terms of what are we going to do with case management regionally? Do we need six or eight individual programs, or should we look at regionalizing case management, merging units, you know, whatever it may take to make it an available service, because it is considered a core service, and to make it cost effective. Story County has the largest case management unit in the region. We're currently serving 360 clients, and there are some changes coming up with a Medicaid service called Integrated Health Homes that will be requiring us to move some of our clients off of case management into these health homes within a year's time. And so we're going to see those shifts in caseloads as well. How much of this are we going to know by the time we sit down in budget? I don't know if this work group is going to have, they're supposed to start meeting this fall. I don't know if the work group's going to have much of a plan pulled together by January or not. But regionally, and our regional board will be in place by then, we'll have to be making, you know, I think plan A, B, and C in terms of case management and deciding what direction we want to go. In the end, the case management programs will be serving primarily the populations of intellectual disabilities, developmental disabilities, and brain injury. Those will be the three populations we'll be continuing to serve after this health home, which is separate from the reimbursement methodology, but it definitely plays into the direction in which case management needs to go.
Well, I think it just makes sense, especially since there's now a cap on administrative cost, that we would look at anything that could save administrative costs long-term, which to me, regionalization, that's where you're going to find any savings you're going to find, is in the administration thing. But I think I'm a little confused about what we're talking about doing here today, because as I see our budget, you're not telling us that case management is going to cost us any more than we budgeted. It's going to cost us close to what we budgeted.
Right.
Even with the reimbursables and the indirect costs that we're talking about. What you're telling, or what I think you're telling me now is the revenue line item that's supposed to offset that is not going to be quite as large as we expected, which means we're going to have a little bit of a shortfall there. But I'm not sure why that would require us to take action to forgive anything. You know, you go through our $40 million budget, there's lots and lots of places that revenues don't come in quite like we expected. Now, I think it's great that we know this ahead of time.
I think you're right on, and I don't know if it's a question of any action that we would need, but it's a form of documentation as to the fact that this is where we are, this is now where adjustment needs to be noted, because, you know, the projected revenue did not reach what we were anticipating. So how you do that is probably more in the area of you two, your auditing standpoint. The question for us would be, is now that we are aware of it, and we can then kind of move forward realizing that we're not going to be able to receive the same amount of revenue that we would normally have projected. So it's got to be indirectly made up somewhere, and since it's still the general fund dollars, you know, the concept of waiving is really not necessarily a waiving. It's just that it's being absorbed.
Okay.
You know, if it was still in the mental health fund,
right.
If we were still talking about going from the mental health fund to the general fund, then I can see where we would have to take this step, because there wouldn't be dollars in the mental health fund to pay over to the general fund. In this one, it's a bathtub approach. It's all going in and coming out. And so, I think I would ask that you keep us posted, but unless you see it differently, I don't know that there's any action needed from the board right now other than awareness that this revenue line item is going to be less than we budgeted. We expect $47,000 less than we budgeted, I think is the number you gave.
147
less than we budgeted.
Right, because I think, you know, the decision to move case management to the general fund was predicated on the idea that it would not be affect the general fund.
Right.
And it is.
But that was based on the best information we had at the time also.
Right. So
yeah, legislation.
But, yeah, but because you made a decision, it's good to know that, you know, it's not quite
neutral. I think it's completely appropriate and even necessary, Deb, that you're here today telling us how this change impacts us. I just don't see where it requires any board action at this time. It's just, you know what, our budget's going to – Lucy follows our budget on a daily basis. I mean, we have these ups and downs, and it's good to know them, and we'll try to find savings where we can. And I would encourage you, try to find savings where you can and on that administrative side. But I'd like us to continue to track it just like we track it, because it looks to me like, all said and done, the report that we're going to file with DHS, we need to show, even if it's 35% administrative cost, we need to show what our administrative costs are.
Yes, yep, they want that on the report. Yep, yep.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Okay.
Good.
All right. Thank you for your time on this.
You bet.
Thanks.
You bet.
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, I'm interested in what Lynn Farrell's discussion is going to be today. I was with Angela Connolly last night in a meeting in Polk County, and she says, by the way, I've got a big meeting with Lynn. He said he wanted to really talk to me about the case management situation and the law change. I says, well, I could almost tell you about what it's going to be. But,
yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, it was one of those things that happened, you know, according to the legislative calendar. So it was something that happened at the end of session, and we had very little time to plan and prepare.
Right.
So,
right. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Next item is acknowledge the signature of the vice chair on the Paul Coverdale Science Improvement Act grant application. Paul, I'll just turn to you and let you take it the rest of the way.
This grant application was brought to me last Friday by Amy Fritz, who's one of the medical examiner investigators. The medical examiner was out of town at the time. The postmark date for this is the 19th, and they were not going to be able to get a completed application form in front of us before it had to be mailed. So basically what it is that it's a grant of about $2,100 that if Story County Medical Examiner's Office is selected and they choose to send one of their investigators to this training course in St. Louis, their expenses will be reimbursed up to $2,109. I think it's the plan that if we're not successful and chosen, that they will not send anybody to the school. But it's one of the things that we talked about as we appointed the investigators, and he's come to us on a couple of different occasions talking about his budget and some training issues. So I signed the grant application knowing that if this board did not approve it, that it would not be submitted.
Questions?
Nope.
You got a motion?
It's basically just we're acknowledging the signature. That's all we're basically doing. I don't think it requires any, you know, official action.
And I think I would prefer official action, Wayne, simply because if this had come to us in a more timely fashion where we could have had it on agenda, it would have been under consent agenda, clearly.
Right.
But we would have at least taken action to acknowledge that, yes, the board supports this this request, this grant application.
Well, the only action that I see is the actual action of actually acknowledging the signature for the grant application, understanding, as it said, that its travel to it is contingent upon actually receiving the grant. But I don't. I guess I'm a little confused.
I don't think you and I are disagreeing a whole lot. But Paul signed this as vice chair of the board. Since I was out of town, he signed it as vice chair of the board. But at that point, he didn't have the board backing him up. So now the board needs to back him up. So it is acknowledged, just like you say. But I believe we do need official action.
Yeah, but I'm saying the only official action is that we actually are approving the acknowledgement of the signature.
I'm with you. Is that a motion?
Right. Right.
Okay, and I second that. Further discussion?
I'm staying out of it.
I don't blame you. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Toot?
Aye.
Passes. Just trying to get all the paperwork right now.
All righty.
Next item is consideration of awarding the contract for Dakin's Lake expansion. Mike Cox. You've had a fun week.
Good morning.
How you
good
doing?
Morning.
Well, you are well aware we opened bids last week for the Dakins Lake expansion project, and bids exceeded available funds to a fairly significant. Is this on?
I pushed the little button. I don't know what happened.
There
you go.
So as you know, we opened bids last week for Dakins Lake expansion project. We've been working on for over a year now in the design process, permitting process. Low bid came in at roughly $600,000 over our engineer's estimate. Clearly surprised us all with that amount of discrepancy between the engineer's estimate and available or and the low bid. Next low bid was additional $300,000, roughly, over the low bid. So, you know, undoubtedly, we really don't have a viable option right now other than to reject all bids on the basis of insufficient funds for those. Conservation Board did meet last night, did make that recommendation as well. And, you know, with much discussion, you know, I think it's very clear that that really is apparently our only available option right now decline bids or decline award. However, at the same time, the message that the board remains, Conservation Board remains very committed to this project and desires the project to move forward. But in order to do that, I think I would recommend that you reject bids and that we then take the opportunity to see what we can do to put a bid package back out available and move forward with the project yet this fall, but move forward with it in a little different manner than what we originally bid it, i.e., we bid for the whole project, soup to nuts, from earthwork to construction of buildings, etc. We bid as a lump sum bid to do all of it. I don't know that we enjoyed the most favorable bidding climate when we did that. Bidding climate changes regularly, and I think it changed in our detriment when we did that. So I would recommend, again, that we not award bids, and I would expect that if you concur with this, that I would be back in front of the board in a few weeks with a revised bid package and ask for your authorization at that time to go back out, put request for bids back out, and maybe just look at construction of the dam this fall.
Just the earthwork portion
you're talking about.
Tell me this, Mike. The bids that we received, it was four bids, correct?
Correct.
How did the earthwork portion of those bids, knowing that we had everything packaged together, but just the earthworks portion, how did that come in compared to Shive Hattery's estimates?
That portion of it came in very close. Some bids were lower than estimate, and some bids were higher than estimate. So that portion of it came in very high.
Other parts of the project that came in real. I mean, you're talking about 30% higher than Shive Hattery estimated for us, right?
Right. So it was it was essentially the subcontracted components of the project that raised the costs. Buildings came in high. Electric came in high. Utilities came in high. Paving came in high. Those kinds of aspects of the project came in higher than we estimated. So if we take out the majority of all of those and rebid with, like I said, just the earthwork, then it seems to make more sense. And that bidding climate is a little different right now than those general contractors or subcontractor bidding climate.
Plus that, it seems to me, I mean, the earthwork is the part that we've got to get done, and we've got to get done right now. The other things, it seems like, can kind of come along as the rest of it starts to fill in, as the lake starts to fill up. So it seems to me
while I understand this will push things off a little bit as you do a new bid package, but it seems to me we still might be able to do this kind of where it dovetails pretty nicely, getting the whole project done, just doing it in pieces.
Oh, I think so. I don't think that this kind of a change of course here in how we manage the project won't be done to the detriment of the project. I don't think it will harm the project at all. We'll still end up with the same product, but we'll get about it. We're hoping to get about it a little different way. And, you know, clearly we have to now with the funds available, and maybe this is to our benefit in the long run to do it a slightly different manner than what we originally anticipated.
Other questions?
Not so much as a question, but just a follow-up comment to say I was, of course, attended the Conservation Board meeting as normally as our representative there as a non-voting member. And I would say that, as Mike has already alluded to, this was a very engaging board and a great deal of discussion. We had a person from Shive Hattery there to kind of explain, you know, how things may have factored in, the differential in costs. But I think overall it was probably one of the most encouraging deliberations on the part of the Conservation Board, along with the direction of Mike, that I've seen in a long time, in actually coming up with what is the best and most logical way for us to try to move forward. And I wanted to just publicly compliment, you know, the entire board, but also, Mike, you and your leadership through this entire process. I was extremely impressed with the whole deliberation that took place last night. And I certainly, unless Supervisor Trude has a comment, I would certainly move that we accept the Conservation Board's recommendation to reject the bids at this time, and they would move forward with putting together another bid package that will come to us at a later date.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. I think the only comment I would make is I want to underscore that, you know, from day one, this board really got behind the idea of this project and have been very consistent in our role in that, which basically is the provision of dollars. We provided the dollars that we said from day one we were going to provide. Those dollars are sitting there ready to be utilized as soon as we can get the project moving. You know, you never like it when you have hurdles that pop up in front of you. But I just want to underscore that Story County is completely committed to providing the funds necessary for conservation to utilize to finish this project, and we just got to figure out how to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Further discussion. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. All bids are rejected. Mike, we ask that you go and repackage this thing and come back to us.
Thank you.
Thanks. Next item is discussion of Iowa DOT U.S. Highway 30 planning study environmental assessment. This was something that we had referred on. I think Mike spoke to it very briefly last Tuesday. Mike, I don't want to speak for everybody. I think you and Leanne and Darren Moon all met and visited about this.
Correct. And Leanne has drafted a memorandum here that I'll let her talk about.
If you'll look at the memo dated today to the three of you from Darren, Mike, and myself, in response to the letter from the DOT and Jorge Zamora, we've reviewed the proposed planning corridor study for U.S. Highway 30 and identified a number of environmental impacts and socioeconomic impacts. Those are bullet pointed. If you want us to go through, we can. Each one, but it is in front of you. We would just recommend that the board identify these concerns or comments in a letter signed by the chair and forward on behalf of Story County to Mr. Zamora prior to July 27th. Would you like me to?
Is there any high points you need to point out for the record?
You know, I'll just. from the, you know, this clearly go into their environmental impact study. And when we look at that site, a corridor all the way from Interstate 35 over to 11th Street here in Nevada, we are, Story County Conservation is working on developing inventory of sensitive areas within the county. And so we do have some of that data, and some research has been done in the past, et cetera. So we look at this is just a great example of how that kind of information would be applied. So when we look at our county layers, if you will, for sensitive areas and all of our GIS work, and hold that up against this corridor, we really don't have anything sensitive of note in this corridor. Now, there are a few things around the edges. There are some threatened and endangered species not far from this corridor, just on the south side, but not within the corridor. There is a remnant prairie just on the north side, not within the corridor, but abuts the corridor. And then some of the zoning overlays that Leanne talks about here in the bullets as well. But in general, this is a very typical central Iowa topography, ag lands with lots of old wetlands involved, and nothing atypical really about it in that regard.
What I would add to that is probably of greater concern are the socioeconomic concerns and impacts. As you well know, within the corridor, there are a number of property owners that use the existing at-grade intersections to move implements from the north side to the south side. And that, in addition to the improvements along the Vetter and Flex Coil site, where the county spent $200,000 to improve that roadway, limiting access to those particular businesses as well as those along 580th could have some potential negative impacts to them.
And I'm glad you said that. I think it's important that we underscore our concerns about those. I know that I think we all at one time or another have attended a DOT meeting where they talked about what they're going to do with this Highway 30 and what that means to us on 590th, 600th specifically, but it could end up impacting Airport Road. There could be impacts on 580th as it runs north. Clearly there's some major concern, and I think very valid concern, on some of these farmers that have to move north and south. We've got DuPont going in out there, already have Lincoln Way Energy on Lincoln Way, and they've got to find a way to move, and where are you going to send them? Airport Road's not conducive to farm implements because it's curb and gutter. It's not wide enough. We just took action. Well, I think this week it was approved that 600th is now on our farm-to-market system. So clearly we've identified that as a major route. And I think all of those concerns, we better be pointing out those concerns every chance we get. And I would like us to utilize this letter to point those out as concerns that that we better stay on top of.
For the record, the final three bullet points, the last one on the bottom of page one, does reference the addition of 600th to the farm-to-market network. And the unknowns of traffic that will be associated with DuPont, associated with that improvement, or that addition to farm-to-market network. The two bullet points on the top of page two talk about the improvements along 590th for Vetter and again, reference the traffic associated with Lincoln Way Energy and the unknown of DuPont. And then the last bullet point does address the existing land uses within that corridor, and primarily the majority being, over 3,000 acres agriculture in nature and commodity production, type of production.
My one concern would be oftentimes when these studies do come before the DOT, will there be a follow-up on our part after the deadline that is submitted to make sure, even though we may or may not get a comment back from them right away, I think I would just suggest that we do a follow-up just to make sure that they have received this and going back to some of the public forum discussion meetings where, you know, they are talking about doing a lot of the proposed things, a lot of times we as a county that didn't necessarily have a role. It was mostly the landowners. But I think in this case, we do have some concerns. And I would hope that Supervisor Sanders, as chair, you would continue to feel empowered to communicate these forums and whoever else you think is important, because there will be several other opportunities, I think, over the next few months as they begin to finalize their plan. So it's just something that I've experienced over a number of years. And I think the only other time that I recall us really playing an active role was in the proposed rest stop area there. And I think it made a big difference in terms of how they move forward with that project. So I want to thank all three of you as well. And I would just ask that the board stay closely engaged with this process and see what other steps we need to do to make sure that our concerns are conveyed.
So I think at this point, if you guys are okay with it, I need direction from you that directing me as chair to draft a letter utilizing this memorandum to the DOT, just expressing our thoughts and concerns.
I'll make that motion.
Second it.
Okay, further discussion. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. You said by the 27th? All right. You'll help me draft the letter. This can be the format. Okay. Thanks. Next is agency reports. And the first agency report that we have today is Storytime Child Care Center, Jane Paul. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Jane.
How are you?
Good. It's going well.
Good.
I am Jane Underhill.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay. Anyway, I'm the director at Storytime in Maxwell. Storytime is a low-income community that serves Collins, Maxwell, and surrounding areas. We provide before school, after school, full-time infant, and preschool. We're open 6 to 6, and we are open year-round. We're licensed for 42 kids, which at this time we're full. We have 8 babies, 22 2 to 5-year-olds, and 12 school-age kids. We have 4 kids that are on DHS funding. And then for our low-income levels, level 1, we have 11. Level 2, there's 9. And level 3, there's 18 kids. I have 10 employees, and I think that our preschool program is going to, I think it's the enrollment for that is going to get bigger because the school district has a preschool program in Maxwell. It's there right now, but it's going to move to Collins and small town stuff. There's not going to be a bus from Maxwell to Collins for people. So I've already have 3 signed up for ours this year.
Huh.
I think it's good. But we're doing great, and our enrollment has risen, and I think we're a pretty good program, and my teachers are great. I don't have a big overturn for teachers, which I think is important.
Absolutely.
Good. Very good.
Well, thank you very much. Questions for Jane?
Just keep up the good work. I hear no news is good news. We really don't receive any complaints, so things must be going well.
Yeah. And Aaron Davenport's still on my board.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. He's been on it since 91.
Health.
It comes and goes, but I keep track of him.
Yeah, okay, great.
Yep.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here today. Next agency report we have is Ireley Ball. Good morning.
My name is Kathy Dingus. I'm the new clinical director for the Ames.
Check to see if that's on. Yeah.
I'm sorry, for the Story and Boone
county offices.
Welcome.
So, thank you. I have provided a kind of a summation of this last year. This is the anniversary for Ireley Ball, which has been open since July 1 of 2012. And I was fortunate enough to join the agency in April of this year, so still learning the ropes and getting to know people, and it's really been a very enjoyable experience for me, especially living in Storey County. Over this course of this first year, our clinic has served 878 separate individuals in one of our services. And primarily, we provide medication management and individual psychotherapy for clients suffering from, you know, forms of mental illness. We also have small programs where we can provide supported community living to individuals that meet the criteria for that program, care coordination, and then we have a very small senior outreach program that I'm hoping that we can expand in this next year. Just a little bit of a demographic breakdown there of the individuals that we served. And then for the month of June, the number of individuals that that we served in our two major programs with Ireley Ball. The probably the most interesting and I think useful engagement I've had since I came here is a program that we are developing with Mary Greeley Hospital. It is common knowledge for for people who work in our field, for folks who are being discharged from an inpatient hospital setting to have a lot of relapses into the emergency room and then subsequent hospitalizations. And so we have worked up a program with Mary Greeley where we have our care coordinator visiting the hospital on 3 days a week and finding out who is ready for discharge, helping those individuals who are residents of Storey and Boone County manage their medication, you know, getting their medication, getting them their first appointments, and if we have to drive them there, we will. But helping those individuals reach a stabilization point in the hopes that we can reduce their hospitalizations and, you know, and hopefully get them into other services that might maintain their stability over time. So we're very excited about that. We've just gotten off the ground for the last couple weeks. We have four individuals in service so far. We are also starting a group of, it's called STEPS program, and it's for individuals who have some anger management issues, emotion regulation. There's a specific population that it's geared towards, and we start that at the end of this month. So we're pretty excited about that. Probably the best thing is that we have hired a full-time licensed individual to come and work in the agency. Right now, we're managing with some folks helping us out from the Des Moines office, and we really need to have a permanent person of our own, and she starts with us on August 12th. So things are going well. Any questions you might have?
I would be curious, the recidivism rate, do we know what it is in that first 60 days when somebody comes out of inpatient, the likelihood of them going back within the 60 days?
I don't have any exact information for you. I could get that.
To me, it would just be interesting to see what it has been. This sounds like a great program. To see what it has been and what we're able to do with it.
Right. It will certainly be part of future information because we're collecting a fair amount of data. So we will have the numbers of hospitalizations for individuals served and then subsequently what that looks like over the course of maybe the next year. And Mary Greeley is helping us gather that information about those clients. So I think in coming years we'll have better information locally and then be able to compare that to national statistics.
Outstanding. Thank you.
Okay.
Questions?
Not so much. I definitely appreciated the opportunity I had a little over a month and a half ago to come out and visit your facility and meet you when you first came. And I'm curious in terms of regionalization and where we're located and with Mary Greeley and so forth, if future plans is going to mean that you're going to need to look for additional space, because I can anticipate a lot more client activity and so forth, and I I know that isn't something right now that's probably immediately forecast, but I know we need to probably keep our eyes open in terms of what options may be out there if you need to expand or farm out some clinical offices someplace else in the community.
Exactly, and we are keeping an eye on that. And as you and I visited, I'm always looking for places where we can expand and provide a greater amount of services in the community, different kinds of services. All of that will mean more space for individuals to provide that care. So I think we're sort of on a cusp right now of where we're going to need to be really mindful of that and making some plans for the future.
Outstanding. Well, I want to underscore how much I appreciate the relationship between Story County and Ierley Ball. I know we've just made it through our first year, and a lot of things went as we expected, and some of the things didn't go as we expected. But I've appreciated Ierley Ball stepping in and helping in some areas that maybe we didn't see coming. All the changes in the mental health system that we've seen now for the last year, and the help that you've given us with our CLP program, but most importantly to the residents of Story County. So thank you.
Welcome.
Oh, great.
Next item, boy, it just leads right into it. Departmental report, Community Life Program, Ron Christensen. Hi, Ron.
Hi. Good morning. I would also like to thank Ierley Ball for the help that they've given us. It's been tremendous. Chris has been great to work with. So
make sure you're on, and
yeah,
I agree.
I think it is.
Just, okay?
Yep.
Just needs to pull it a little closer, just a little closer. There you go.
With the board's permission, I'd kind of like to just highlight a few things. This is a very long report, and then maybe spend a little bit more time on the last page, which is the financial report for the fiscal year.
Okay.
Story County Community Life served around 214 people this quarter, and that number's remained kind of stable over the last few months since we took on the Richmond Center caseload. In preparation for our upcoming IME review, it was discovered that we had one issue, and that review is tomorrow and Thursday, by the way. One issue was that we were supposed to be training our staff on our new staff on our child abuse reporting policy before they worked with clients. We discovered that hasn't been happening. So that's an issue that will probably come up tomorrow. I just wanted to point that out. It's just something that we'll have to do a corrective action on. It won't be, I don't think it's a findable thing in any way. We are providing the training. It's just not happening before they meet with clients. During the months of April and May, the resource coordinator reviewed case notes from 26 staff. Only one staff member fell below our 90% threshold, so we thought that was really good. This is the first time we've really measured the productivity that people are providing in as far as paperwork goes and whether or not it meets standard or not. So of the notes that were read, 12 out of 368 were found to be unacceptable. So that's like 3.3%, which we didn't think was too bad at all. So we don't see a need for a remediation plan in that area. Billing is completed through April at this point. This is not as timely as we would like, but right now our financial department is short a person. I'm going to be coming back to you on the 30th with Alyssa to talk about hiring a financial manager. So that's kind of our next step in that area. I think once we get that person on board, we'll be able to be much more timely with our billing. Our revenues through the end of June were 58% over what we had projected them to be or budgeted them to be, so we're pretty happy about that. Skipping into the vocational area, the people who are working in our supported employment program and have jobs are making an average of $9.26 per hour, which is up a little bit over last quarter. They're averaging approximately 17 and a half hours per week, and 73% of the people that we're working with are employed in one way or another. Day services wise, we're averaging around 31 people a day, which is up by a couple of people over last quarter also. I know I'm going really fast, so stop me if you have questions. And then I think we'll just skip to the last page and talk about the financial report. Our budgeted amount for FY13 was approximately $4.8 million. We actually spent $3.6 million, so that was a savings of around $1.2 million in FY13. Our revenues were budgeted at 1.4, and our actual revenues were around 2.3.
And Ron, I'll just stop you right there and want to underscore, I believe, and Lucy's sitting here so she can correct me if I'm wrong, this is our amended budgeted numbers because originally we expected more revenue. I mean, when we set the budget for FY13, we expected more revenue than we got and then found out that things weren't going to happen the way we originally thought.
Correct. Mm-hmm. In FY13, we did receive a cost settlement of approximately $400,000. There's no guarantee that will be there again, but we think it will. If we were to have billed Story County for the services that we provided to Story County citizens, we believe we would have received around $818,000 last year for that. This year, we are going to start billing the county on paper. There won't be money moving back and forth, but we can at least track those costs better and know for sure for the next fiscal year how much we would be billing Story County. And then the last thing that was added in was we did do a rate increase for our group homes, and I think that's going to generate around $200,000 in the next fiscal year. So if all of everything stayed the same in the upcoming fiscal year, I believe it would come out around $74,000 to the positive.
Including the billable hours to Story County, there's not going to be dollars there for.
Yep. Correct. So also down at the bottom of my bullet points, I talked about the rate increase that our employees received of around $29,000. And then if we were to get the jail contract that we've been talking about for providing classes in the jail, that would also generate around $29,000. So those things would kind of offset each other. Any questions or concerns?
I think I would jump in and say FY13 was an amazing year in a lot of ways, but mental health, I don't necessarily mean it in a good way. There were lots and lots of struggles. Clearly, we had some staff changes, and Ron, I just want to say to you and your staff where we ended up on this. It almost defies belief how we took something that looked like it could end up so terrible, and through a lot of hard work from a lot of people, most notably you, I believe, we were able to turn this thing around and come out in as good a shape as possible going into FY14. Now the challenge for you in FY14 is we got to figure out what this looks like long term.
Right.
And I appreciate the way you're putting this together because it does give us some idea of kind of where we're moving long term. But this is going to be a really, really challenging year trying to get it done. And I'm so appreciative to the efforts you're putting in, mostly for the clients we serve. I mean, this is an important program. It's something that Story County is responsible for. And so I just want to thank you. But there's a lot of hard work ahead.
My staff have certainly stepped up. I want to give them a lot of the credit. And going forward, the challenge is how do we grow, but not grow too fast, and grow in an intelligent way. And that's part of what Chris has been helping me with from Early Ball. So I really appreciate that.
Yep.
But thank you.
I feel like you're absolutely on the right track, and now we just got to continue to ask the hard questions and maybe get some answers that we don't particularly like from time to time, but just try to work our way through it. Wayne, I know you're his liaison.
Yep, and basically that's what we spent our time yesterday, pretty much highlighting the report that he gave today, so I really didn't have any questions. Again, I would echo 100% your comments in regard to the leadership that has been shown and how the staff has pulled together to tackle what we thought was going to really be an insurmountable task to deal with, and to be even talking about having a projection of where we perhaps are going to be ending this fiscal year with a little bit of a surplus, I think is just really amazing. And I mean, that requires some making some tough decisions early on, but necessary. And the important thing was, again, I think this was something that I appreciated. I think you really engaged your staff in the whole process, and having that cooperative attitude, I think, is why this is successful. And again, I applaud you in reaching out, asking us about asking Ali Ball to come in and kind of assist us in areas where you felt that this would be very helpful. And that collaboration and cooperation and partnership, I think, is really going to pay dividends as we move forward in the future. So again, thank you.
Yeah, and Wayne, I think you're right on the money. I would just, Ron, correct me if I'm wrong here. I believe that the billable cost to Story County of $818,892, that's the first time I've seen a number like that where we can it was hard to make decisions. We knew there were, we knew we were providing a benefit to the residents of Story County, but we never, or at least I never saw a number that told us quite what that was costing us. And so I'm really appreciative that we've got that number now in front of us, and now we can start looking at that number and saying, okay, what kind of value are we getting for those dollars? And I think it's completely appropriate, and I think it's completely the right direction, and allows us to make some of the decisions we need to make. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates. Wayne.
I just gave my liaison
assignment. Outstanding.
And the only thing is that yesterday evening I had the pleasure of speaking at a public forum in Des Moines along with Angela Conley from Polk County, as we talked about transportation needs, and we met about 30 some odd clients yesterday evening. They had well over 65 earlier during the day with human service providers and so forth. And this is just part of the ongoing plan to figure out and find out what are the what needs are out there as far as transportation, and how through a collaborative effort the various agencies can come together. And I was very pleased that we had representatives from SciRide there last night. We also had Angela Davidson from the Chamber there. So Story County was well represented, it, along with former director of HRDA, Christian Haar, who is now with the DOT right here in Ames. So I thought that was an excellent start, and there's going to be focus groups and other opportunities addressing transportation needs in the future, and I'll keep you posted on how that shakes out.
All right. Thank you very much. Paul? Nothing from me. Other reports? We don't have any. Public forum number two. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. Clearly, we're not going to take any action, but we might do so in the future. Anybody? Seeing no one. Announcements from the supervisors. Anything, Wayne?
Just that I will be in Fort Worth for the National Association of Counties annual conference in Fort Worth, Texas. I'll be leaving on Friday. I have two committee assignments. One I'll drop in on late Friday afternoon, but all day Saturday and Sunday on the Environmental Energy and Land Use Steering Committee. We're still out there fighting EPA and all the regulations, so that should be quite interesting. But as you are well aware, this is really significant for the state of Iowa, in that Supervisor Linda Langston from Linn County will be sworn in as the president of the National Association of Counties for this next year. And so we probably have the largest contingency of elected officials from across the state that we've had in any other annual conference. So I think I totaled close to about 40 representatives that are going to be there in Fort Worth this year for that inauguration. So
outstanding. It'll only be 112 degrees.
So let's not talk about that.
Yeah. Paul, anything?
Yeah. Just that we're meeting as drainage trustees tonight in Story City at 6:30. So
if there's nothing on TV, come on
up.
No meeting on the 23rd is my announcement, and thank you to Civil Attorney Jessica Reynolds for the water today. Really appreciate it. Anything else for us? Next item is Civil Attorney Jessica Reynolds.
Good morning to the board. Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5 sub 1 sub C, the County Attorney's Office requests a closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation or where litigation is imminent, where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the governmental body in that litigation.
Okay. Probably need to take a few minutes.
We need a motion first.
Motion. I move that we go into closed session pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Clinton.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We will adjourn for 5 minutes and then be in closed session.
Okay.
All right. I will call us back to order in open session. Ask that Civil Attorney Jessica Reynolds get the open meeting record appropriate.
At this time, the County Attorney's Office is asking for action regarding what was discussed in closed session. The County Attorney's Office is asking for authorization to send a demand letter to Nationwide Insurance.
I will second it.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So directed.
Thank you.
Good.
If there is nothing further, I would take a motion to adjourn.
Move adjournment.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thanks.
I've got a dental appointment at one.
Thanks for coming over.
Who is Roger Fritz?
He's the mayor of Roland.
Comegys.
Yeah. Comegys and Pop, I don't know about. It's on the calendar.